I'm not urging that you do that because I think you'll find that the whole bill is a good bill.
This tape is a recording of the meeting of Subcommittee Number 3 held in Room 309 Capitol Building on August 7th, 1968.
Got a copy for you, Stuart?
Yeah, I think I will get it.
Okay.
Put some cream sugar in the freezer.
Are there three of you?
I'm glad to see everybody here this morning. Sorry, a little bit late myself. Sorry to miss the last meeting, so I'm a little bit behind.
Chairman, I think we'll just turn it over to the reporter, Professor Arthur, and have him proceed to the first item on the agenda. Well, first of all, Mr. Chairman, we have the minutes of the meeting of July 20th. It's our last meeting of this committee.
I move that be approved as sent on, Mr. Chairman, with noting that the new line of judges were as wordy as they are.
Okay.
You did.
Second to that motion. All in favor?
I think that this board will proceed to have coordinate go ahead with this second draft, which is item number 2 on your agenda, the second draft, classes and crimes. That's
fine. Fine. Now that the first and foremost thing has been done with what is labeled here as section 2, or excuse me, with preliminary draft number 2, the section that has to do with classification of crimes and setting up a new classification of violations. The first and foremost thing that's been done is that Kathleen Beaufait, who sits down at the corner of the Legislative Council's office, has done a careful redrafting job on it so that the language is more concise and more accurate. The second thing that has been done is to set out several things that a judge can do after conviction that bear on whether the crime shall be a felony or a misdemeanor, if it is a so-called indictable misdemeanor, which can go either way. Now, perhaps I'm a little rigid in the way I have gone about it. I think this draft tends to take care of Frank Knight's objections and tends to take care of Judge Burns' feelings about the situation. In other words, it gives the presiding judge the opportunity not to hang felony a tag on a person, but looking toward the prosecutor's side, looking toward Frank Knight's feeling, it does what I think the California law does, what I think the Arizona law does, and what the Oregon law probably did, but nobody had ever said it. That is to say, the Supreme Court hadn't said it. If there is a conviction for a so-called indictable misdemeanor, it is a felony for all purposes until a misdemeanor sentence is actually imposed. This is the way I intended the draft to be. This is, and I may be too conservative in that I may have been carried away too much by the case law in California and Arizona. Now, going more specifically to the Section 2, first paragraph of it is pretty much what the law is in Oregon now. When a crime punishable by imprisonment in the penitentiary or the Oregon State Correctional Institution is also punishable by imprisonment for a maximum term of 1 year or by a fine, the crime shall be classed as a misdemeanor if the court imposes a punishment other than imprisonment in the penitentiary or the Oregon State Correctional Institution. Now, then it goes ahead and it says, first of all, in sub 2, that notwithstanding the general definition of felony and misdemeanor on the preceding page, that upon conviction of a crime punishable either as a felony or as a misdemeanor, the crime is a felony for all purposes until one of the following events occurs, after which occurrence the crime is a misdemeanor for all purposes. So that for the time being, when one has been convicted of a crime which can either send him to the penitentiary or send him to the county jail, until one of these things happens, this person in effect has been convicted of a felony, but he there is the opportunity for him not to be convicted of a felony, because the court may, without granting probation, sentence him to the county jail, for instance, impose a sentence of imprisonment to a correctional facility other than the penitentiary or the Oregon State Correctional Institute. Or, if the court, that is a misdemeanor, if the court, without granting probation, imposes a fine, then it's a misdemeanor. If the court, upon revocation of probation, imposes a sentence in effect to the county jail, then it's a misdemeanor. If the court, upon revocation of probation, imposes a fine, then it's a misdemeanor. Then E is the California setup. The court declares the offense to be a misdemeanor either at the time of granting probation without imposition of sentence, or on application of defendant or his probation officer thereafter. And F comes from Minnesota. The court grants probation to the defendant without imposition of sentence upon conviction, and defendant is thereafter discharged without sentence. He's more or less earned a misdemeanor situation there. And G is something that I put in on my own motion, my own suggestion. It may not be acceptable to the subcommittee. Without granting probation and without imposing sentence, the court declares the offense to be a misdemeanor and discharges the defendant. The idea there being that there should be the power, without having to scrape around for a lesser included offense that may not exist, that there ought to be the power to, under certain circumstances, to simply not punish, except by such punishment as might be involved in there being a conviction of a misdemeanor on the record. That really isn't as untough as it looks, because it would be used rarely, I suppose, where there really was no sentence. It might be used quite often where the person was under sentence for several other crimes. It would be just cluttering up the record to have a sentence again. But basically, this is what's been done. Then Kathleen and I both felt that there ought to be something here to show that all felony convictions were, where there is imprisonment, are to the penitentiary, that all misdemeanor convictions, whether it's imprisonment, are to an institution other than the penitentiary or the correctional institution. I thought when I said penitentiary, I meant the correctional institution.
Any discussion on the general
case? Yes, I have a question which may be cleared up here because I've just looked at it. The way I read this, sub 1 says what our law now says, and then sub 2, you go ahead and say, however, it's a felony unless one or more of these things occurs. Now, it occurs to me that if A through G is not in fact an exhaustive list, then you have problems. Because even though you don't send him to the penitentiary or the correctional institute, which would make it a misdemeanor under sub 1, sub 2 says, but it's a felony unless one of these events occurs. Now, if there's another event that occurs that isn't comprehended within sub 2, it's a felony. For example, suppose I impose a sentence and suspend execution. Or suppose taking sub B, without granting probation, the court imposes a fine. Suppose I impose a fine and grant probation. Does that make it a felony? And similarly, sub C, without revocation of probation, if the court imposes a sentence, county jail sentence. Suppose I grant probation and impose a county jail sentence. Does that make it a felony?
This depends on whether the county jail sentence is a condition of probation or not. There's a line of California cases to the effect that if the county jail sentence is simply a condition of probation, that in effect he has not been given a county jail sentence, and therefore he's still guilty of a felony.
But the point I make is that in drafting terms, if there is some other disposition other than A through G, it's going to be a felony.
That's right.
Well, one of the I've already thought that the good
correct thoughts, a good fight on the question of whether or not the imposition of sentencing and then the then suspending execution of the sentence would create a felony, and Don and Courtney both agreed and nodded against yes it would, and they thought it should. So that's where I wondered if the courts are that sensitive necessarily in the question of suspending sentencing, you know, or suspending execution to create that tremendous distinction in the result. But they read that first case you cited is exactly right, and that's exactly what was intended. So.
Well, but that's one thing where you say to a burglar 7 years in the pen and suspend execution and place him on probation. Very well. And the conditions serve 30 days or whatever. And it may well be that we will decide that upon that occurring, it ought to be a felony, period. But the second point I make, perhaps I didn't separate them well enough, is that if let's say, taking and using an auto motor vehicle, if I probate and fine under sub 2, is it not a felony? The way it is presently worded here.
It very well may be.
Similarly, if I probate and impose a jail sentence.
This isn't very helpful, and I think your criticism is very well taken, Judge. The California distinction is constantly in their case law. Whether the fine or the jail sentence was simply a condition of probation and not an ultimate punishment. That if it was simply a condition of probation, then the man is still guilty of a felony. If the ultimate sentence is to the county jail or is a fine, then it's a misdemeanor.
That may be what the California cases say, but I could not see any rational basis for that if we're setting up an open intelligence system. If I say to a guy, taking using auto, for example, if I say to him, I'll fine you $500 and place you on probation, or if I say to him, I'll place you on probation and as a condition, you pay a fine of $500, I don't see why in the world one ought to be a felony and the other misdemeanor.
It seemed to me that this,
yes,
that on this section one, which is what is now the Oregon law, that the reason for this statute was to clarify, it seemed to me, and when you've got the indictable misdemeanor situation, was to clarify that from the procedural aspect, it was treated as a felony as far as the preliminary hearing, appointment of counsel, and being tried in circuit court up until the time that the judge imposed a sentence other than a felony sentence. He could then, to make it clear that it was at the time of sentencing that the election was made it was the judge that made the election as to whether or not it was a felony or a misdemeanor. And so that if we're going to, it seems to me that for future clarity, if we're going to have all these things here in section 2, we're going to have to clarify this section 1 because it still leaves open the objection that Judge Burns had last time, because it does say it shall be, it'll be a class of misdemeanor if the court imposes a punishment other than imprisonment in the penitentiary, the correctional institution. So does this mean then that probation, the granting of probation, not being imprisonment in the penitentiary, the correctional institution is a misdemeanor? We might get some conflict between the two of them here, which I think that could be worked out. But it seemed to me that really, do we need to get so setting out all these different types of ways that it can finally be treated as a misdemeanor, would it be too difficult to just say that it will be a felony until the court expressly treats it as a misdemeanor, either by a misdemeanor sentence or a felony sentence, then it's clear. I mean, if the judge says, okay, I'm going to sentence you to 90 days in the county jail on taking and using, he has given him a misdemeanor sentence, and so it's a misdemeanor. But or if he sentences him to the penitentiary, he's treated as a felony. But just have something that, otherwise, like when you got probation and the revocation of probation, when the probation runs out, just have the court enter an order treating this as a misdemeanor when a misdemeanor, when he feels that it should be treated as a misdemeanor and he hasn't sent him to the penitentiary. When
I know it's, and of course maybe I'm, Mr. Chairman, but, and of course it's difficult, not impossible to speak for the judges on something like this, but it would seem to me that the judges would prefer a statute that would give them more of a specific guideline in this kind of area rather than just a general statement where there's going to be some question as to just what their discretion and authority is in these situations. It would seem to me that with respect to your earlier questions, Judge Burns, for example, if you find the man or sentence him to the county jail, whether or not you call that a condition of probation, I think it would fall under the provisions of sub 1, wouldn't it?
I'm not objecting to the breadth of the power given. What I'm objecting to is what seems to me to be the drafting inadequacy. I'm not trying to be harsh.
But
in other words, again, taking and using is a felony because it's punishable by OSP or OCI. All right. Then in sub one you say, but it's a misdemeanor if something other than that happens. So I say, all right, probation and 90 days county jail is conditional probation. Now, then you come down to sub two and it says, taking and using is a felony until one of the following events occurs, after which occurrence it's a misdemeanor. So you go through the list and you say, without granting probation, the court imposes 90 days in the county jail. It's a felony. But what if I grant probation? Excuse me, if you don't grant probation and impose 90 days, it's a misdemeanor because sub 2 says so, 2A. But what if I grant probation and give him 90 days county jail time as a condition? As I read it, it would make it a felony.
Correct.
And I think that's an absurd result. I don't think that's in line. In other words, if I did that, I think clearly under Oregon law, it would be a misdemeanor. I see no reason why we should convert it to a felony, simply because I grant probation and make him serve 90 days as a condition, as opposed to sentencing him to 90 days.
It's probably a policy matter. Now, on precisely the same word in the statute, again, I'm sort of a broken record. California has a long list of cases that say that the granting of probation is not a sentence other than not a sentence at all. It's not a punishment, as it were. They also say that sending a person to a training school as a condition of probation, this is not a sentence other than to the penitentiary, and so it's still a felony. They arrive at that, I think, from the construction of Section 2, Sub 1. This is the way they construe Section 2, Sub 1.
Doesn't the California just say it's going to be a felony until the judge elects to treat it as a misdemeanor either on the application of the defendant or his probation officer and this type of thing?
Yes, they do that.
So that somewhere along the line, if they haven't sentenced to the penitentiary, somewhere along the line, they have a time when the judge makes it a specific decision that he's going to treat this as a misdemeanor, and an order is entered to that effect.
Only if the defendant or a probation officer moves the court to that effect. If they don't, then it's good. No, I'm afraid I've complicated the issue here. I've based it on the proposition that I figured somebody would find those California cases, and that would be the
let things get itself figured out.
Maybe I may be a broken record on this. I think Judge Rodman could undoubtedly, he's had a lot more experience than I have. Probably help us out.
Do you have a comment?
Well, it doesn't bother, it doesn't seem to me it's absurd. You make this decision, you make it knowingly, and you're saying that, all right, this will be the effect of this. And to say in the one case it's a felony, in the other case it's a misdemeanor, when he's actually serving 90 days, this doesn't bother me. But if I understood your initial comment, that it would be, we might avoid future problems if we could not attempt to list certain things and then find out later that there are other things that we hadn't thought of, or combinations of these things that would have a result that was not intended. It might be simpler. Now, maybe you've taken this approach, maybe you can't do it. A simple statement that unless a certain thing happens, then this will be treated as considered a felony. Apparently that's what it starts off in section 2, but then it's necessary apparently to list all these specific conditions.
I wonder if we could get at it this way. After all, we're still in the area of classification of crimes. This is the major attempt we're making here. We're also trying to solve the problem of in this in-between land, what is a felony and what's a misdemeanor. One of the problems is created by the fact that a judge either imposes a sentence and suspends execution, or he suspends imposition and places on probation in either event. Why could we not approach it this way? Say that simply use sub 1 and add that the imposition of a sentence in penitentiary or the correctional institution, followed by suspension of execution thereof, shall not make it a felony. And then, whatever you do on this probation thing and so on, it's a misdemeanor.
But then, don't we get into the same no man's land that you were talking about last time, that when you revoke probation, whether or not by not sentencing him to the penitentiary in the first place, you have made it a misdemeanor, and whether or not he can then be probation revoked, whether he could even be sentenced to the penitentiary.
I wouldn't think that'd be an insuperable difficulty. We now, in the indictable misdemeanor situation now, taking and using, for example, if we suspend imposition of probate and then later revoke and impose a sentence in the penitentiary, clearly a felony after.
Jim, another way possibly, I was thinking about it, I don't know, but this G is the all-inclusive, 2G is the all-inclusive power, it seems like, you might, assuming that specifying these different ways of doing this, advisable or better, we could probably change the language of 2G a little bit, couldn't we, do the same thing with any other sentence, short of imposition of sentence and correction execution of penitentiary. Do you see what I'm getting at? If we assume that these are the rough spellings now.
That's actually what the situation is now.
That is, yeah.
That we're trying to clarify. And my objection last time was that the way it was worded is that the judge at the time of the original sentencing had to say it was either a felony or a misdemeanor right then, right at the time of the original. And it's my feeling that the way Judge Mengler does on a lot of these indictable misdemeanors is just suspend imposition of sentence for a period of a year, and then whether or not it's ultimately going to be a felony or misdemeanor the burden is on them to behave. And that's actually how we got into all this specification, so that the judge doesn't have to make this specific felony misdemeanor decision at the time of the original sentencing. He can delay it. And it doesn't seem to me that it's really necessary to set out all these variety of ways if the judge at the time he decides to do one of these, other than sentencing him to the, actually sentencing him to the penitentiary, he says, I'm treating this as a misdemeanor as long as the statute gives him authority to do it. It could take care of all this and all the other possible situations that might arise.
I don't know whether, Mr. Chairman, I don't know whether this is helpful or not. When I first sat down with after our last meeting, I threw up something like this. That when the court finally imposes a fine or a jail sentence, it should be a misdemeanor. Captain, do you recall some language, something like that? And you and I came to the conclusion that wouldn't work. Now, why did we come to that conclusion?
Well, I know one of the problems is the first thing that presented itself was the use of the word final. I remember objecting to that because which one is the final kind of thing, which I think is California language and they may have a definition on it. But I think the thing we were worried about there was the same problem, and that is the difference between imposing sentence and suspending execution as opposed to suspending sentencing and so forth didn't seem to be covered by that when you because our procedural
differences in California. No, a lot of times you have pretty much judged Burns against what we have now.
I thought I voiced them at sufficient length at the time we were discussing this problem, but I don't come up with the answer. I was trying to make a list of all of the alternatives here that you could have coming up with, and I think the distinction between what happens to the defendant and the simple question of whether what it is a misdemeanor or a felony does kind of skip around when you look at the probation with fine or jail as a condition becomes a felony, but a fine or jail sentence suspended and probation granted, as far as the guy's concerned, he's about in the same situation. That is a misdemeanor under your draft. And whether it should be or not, I wouldn't want to comment, but it does seem to me to be maybe a little bit of a logical problem. And I wonder if all the parties involved make that sensitive a judgment about, you know, whether probation comes before or after.
I'm sorry I wasn't here for your last meeting, but what is the reason, what is the purpose of this subsection 2 and section 2? What reason is it for? Because it actually completely abolishes the definition of misdemeanor in section 1.
It isn't intended to, Judge.
Well, it does. It says everything is a felony except when these things occur.
That's on the basis that the only punishments are jail sentences and fines.
Right.
And so that if...
But you say notwithstanding the provision of subsection 3, one conviction of a crime, punishment defined in section 1, crime to felony for all purposes.
Well, the subsection 2 and 3 of section 1 refer to the first page,
right.
Which are definitions of felony and misdemeanor.
What is the purpose? What is the reason for delineating these particular things? Why don't you just say if you want the judge to have some discretion that the judge will declare an offense to be a misdemeanor if he thinks it appropriate?
First of all, it seems to me that he should not have the power to do so if he also sentences a man to penitentiary.
Well, obviously he wouldn't sentence him to penitentiary if he does that. But really, in the sum total of what you're doing here, you give him this actual ultimate authority. He can select from one of these things a punishment or a situation which will make it a misdemeanor. And then he has this option. So why not just give him the option? If you have a situation, which I assume this is intended to mean, where the offense would normally be a felony, but because perhaps, technically a felony,
But the judge may feel that the man has some innocent intent involved in the thing, or was mistakenly advised, or whatever the reason may be. The judge may feel it's wrong to brand this man as a felon. So I'm going to declare this to be a misdemeanor.
This is only the only time that I died.
But this, I think the point that I would certainly take out the reference 2 sub 2 to subsection 3 of sub 1, or section 1, because I don't think that's necessary. Because what we were trying to do was, in the, we don't have any problems where it's a straight out penitentiary or OCI sentence, that's a felony. And where it's a straight out jail sentence, that's a misdemeanor up to a year. No problem there. The problem comes from where you've got the choice, penitentiary or county jail or fine or a combination. And I think the intent of all of Section 2 was to enlarge the options available to the judge, and in doing so, to make an intelligent selection of which of those options will thereafter be accompanied by the felony tag, and which would be accompanied by the misdemeanor tag, so that, for example, possession of narcotics, is it or is it not, or you grant probation. Either do or do not impose the county jail time. Is it now a felony or misdemeanor? Very sincere in saying, I don't know. I think the Supreme Court, if faced with it, would say it's a felony, but they haven't had to say so. But in the, where there is a choice between penitentiary or county jail, I think it was a feeling that there should be a wide variety of options available to the judge. This is a matter of sentencing. And similarly, within that variety of options, some should and some and others should not bear the felony label thereafter. And I think this is what we were trying to get at. I'm not sure we did, but
I don't see how you can possibly list the numerous categories or situations that may confront a judge in which he would feel it was wrong to brand this man a felon, even though technically what he's done.
Of course, one easy answer is simply to say that whenever it's an indictable misdemeanor, the judge at the time shall say this is a felony or it's a misdemeanor. That is, I think, a simple solution. I'm not too sure that's a wise solution. It confers an enormous amount of power. I'm not sure that all judges want. I'm not sure that others in our society want to have that much power. That presents a real philosophical question.
In effect, at this time, the judges have that power now.
Within some degree of latitude, we do.
But rather than just specifically saying this is a misdemeanor or a felony, that you do it by the manner in which you impose sentence.
I agree, but in the areas that are cloudy, we don't know. Take the narcotics area, for example. I don't know when I probate someone for possession of narcotics whether I'm attaching a felony or a misdemeanor tag to them now. And I thought one of the things we were trying to achieve was to remove as many doubts as we could in this area, so that when you do something other than confine penitentiary, that you also know what ancillary consequences in terms of labor in that action.
Don, I think Judge Brinson made reference to something that I think somebody's going to have to consider, and I'm sure the layman and the legislature will consider. Most of the things I've read, for instance, seem to favor, and I don't say that I've read near everything that's been written recently, but the idea of the indeterminate sentence, the idea of a parole board or some other agency perhaps equalizing the sentences. I personally favor more personalized approach to it, given the judge who's really on the firing line, the both the power and the means for rehabilitating through the sentencing process. But what are the other codes doing? What's the general approach? Is the indeterminate sentence approach pretty well out in the model code and in the other recent codes, or do you have you got into that yet?
Well, we haven't really got into it any great extent, but I can say this, it's my impression that the general attitude is moving away from the indeterminate sentence approach. I know that the National Council on Crime and Delinquency, Mr. Rubin, for example, their objection to the indeterminate sentence is that in practice it has not had the result that was intended. In other words, they feel that it has resulted in longer sentences for individuals rather than shorter ones. So from the standpoint of length of sentence, which the National Council is particularly concerned with, and which the Model Sentencing Act is concerned with, too, might add, I think there has been a movement away from this indeterminate sentence. Now, I'm not prepared to tell you what all the different states are doing. I don't know. But,
well, I'd want to add to that simply this, that even in the states where the judge doesn't have the sentencing power, California and Washington, for example, he still has the power to adopt an alternative other than a confinement in the penitentiary at the outset. So this problem here would still confront a judge in that area as to whether judges or the parole board or adult authority ought to fix the length of the sentence when the judge finally says you should be confined. That seems to me that's another problem we're going to have to get to and face.
But I would like to say this also, Mr. Chairman. I think that the direction is toward granting the courts and the judges greater discretion and greater authority at the time of sentencing or at the time of dealing with the offender. Now, certainly as you compare this with the Model Penal Code, I think this is a fairly modest proposal in comparison, say, with the Model Penal Code. For example, Section 6.12, which deals with disposition of offenders, grants the court the authority when a person's been convicted of a felony, the court can then, having regard to the nature and circumstances of the crime, history and character of the defendant, etc. If the court, in its own discretion, feels it would be unduly harsh to handle this matter, although it's been declared to be a felony, if the court's of the view that it should be handled as a lesser degree of a felony or as a misdemeanor, the court, under the Model Penal Code approach, would have this power and authority and discretion. So.
You say it was two separate questions, then?
Yeah, I think they're separate questions, really. I don't know whether Professor Arthur agrees with that.
I do. Don Blepp called my attention last week to the American Bar Association's tentative draft on standards related to sentencing alternatives and procedures, and in Section 3.7, they go further than our draft does by considerable, in that they say this, that for all crimes, not just for our so-called indictable misdemeanors, that if the defendant has been convicted of a felony, and if the court, considering the nature and circumstances of the offense and the history and character of the defendant, concludes it would be unduly harsh to sentence the defendant to the term normally applicable to the offense, the court should be authorized to reduce the offense to a lower category of felony or to a misdemeanor and to impose sentence accordingly. This is practically
the ALI approach, right?
The draft we have here certainly does not attempt to do that, but only seeks, perhaps very unsuccessfully, to make clear what the present law is or what to get a consensus on the mechanics of the present law. The present law is enforced in this state, and in a very almost identical language in California, Arizona, Idaho, and pretty much so in Minnesota, which sets up some crimes as indictable misdemeanors to punish either as a felony or as a misdemeanor. What is it a felony? What is it a misdemeanor? And there's one other criticism of what I've attempted to do here. I really haven't solved the marijuana problem for the judge. The marijuana statute says, I think, 10 years in the penitentiary or $5,000 fine. It doesn't say so much in the penitentiary or a year in the county jail with a $500 fine. If it said those magic words, then we would all say, okay, this is an indictment of misdemeanor. Go either way, it doesn't use that language.
Judge Sloper has ruled that since he's permitted to give a fine only, he can classify it as a misdemeanor to give a fine.
But the Supreme Court hasn't ruled on that yet, with all due respect to Judge Sloper. The other decisions in this area lead many to believe that Judge Sloper would not be sustained on that. I personally think he's right. I think Sloper's right, but there's confusion on it. For example, Des Fountain, sitting next to you, believes very strongly the other way, I think.
Professor Platt,
do you have any comments particularly on this question? I was interested in whether we're at the point where we have discussed any philosophy here about
what you think the public
will buy in the way of sentencing.
I'm inclined to think that the California approach is the better approach. I don't know what the public will buy. I would expect that. May I make a comment somewhat disjointed but still related to our situation here in terms of the question in section 2, sub 2, and subparagraph E. This may be an obvious answer. I'm not quite sure. The court declares the offense to be a misdemeanor, either at the time of granting probation without imposition of sentence. Right? Let's say that it's an indictable misdemeanor and the court declares without imposing sentence that this is a misdemeanor. It puts the man on probation. During that period of probation, he acts in such a manner that shocks everybody. He's a terrible offender of his probation. Is the judge then tied to his misdemeanor holding, or may he then change his mind and impose a felony sentence, where he feels that that the sentence to the penitentiary would be in the best interest of this particular accused?
He is treated as a misdemeanor.
They're declared a misdemeanor by the court at the time of probation. The answer then is the court is then tied to sentence as a misdemeanor in violation of probation.
Yeah. I think so.
Right. I
think
that's
California.
That's
I
think the judge could thereafter then increase it to a higher degree.
But could he not do that if he revoked probation and imposed a sentence in the penitentiary? Would it not then be a felony?
Well, not if he's declared as a misdemeanor.
I think that's a mistake.
Well, you're saying now you put the sentence in that
case. Well, I wondered if the answer is that the court is tied then to a misdemeanor sentence, no matter how bad the violation of probation is, that no court, or not many courts, would say at the time of granting probation this is a misdemeanor, because they wouldn't want to restrict their discretion with respect to a probation violator.
Would it
really be effective? The point I'm raising.
Yes, but maybe it wouldn't. That's just the California situation. Under this draft, under F, if they do that same thing, grants probation and do not impose sentence, and don't declare it a misdemeanor, but the defendant successfully concludes his period of probation, then he's a misdemeanor.
With respect to G, I had one question, and I think that I anticipate what your answer is. But now, did you contemplate that the court, without granting probation and without declaring the offense to be a misdemeanor, that the court could just discharge the defendant and it would stand as a felony even though no imprisonment had been imposed?
Yes, but I thought that there would have to be other legislation to give the court that power. Not
I think that I go along with Justice Sloan's approach, just to very broadly give the court latitude on it. I think that it's important to have things that not only lawyers can understand, but the general public and police officers and so on. And quite frankly, it's way over my head, just too involved. I can't begin to understand this thing. Secondly, I am still very, very concerned that we're sentencing people to penitentiary in the Oregon State Correctional Institution. We use this language all the way through here. And maybe it's too early to say so, but I think that we ought definitely to adopt the philosophy here to sentence them to the correctional administrator or to the corrections division of the state of Oregon. Because I see all kinds of alternatives developing in the correctional field that I don't think we want to tie ourselves down to existing institutions.
I agree thoroughly with that. I just felt that we weren't far enough along to get unhitched from the penitentiary correctional institution. We've got some sections on the last page here which provide, as the present law does, for giving custody to the corrections division and custody to the county sheriff and the demeanor in the present situation. I think I agree with you thoroughly that there will be many alternatives to maximum security institutions, and that there should, perhaps we should at this time make that kind of a draft.
It seems to me that we get around Don's objections here as far as simple and what is that people can understand. If we would simply say, I mean, getting away from what Justice Sloan was talking about in this ABA draft tonight, that there are certain crimes that the judge can treat as a felony or misdemeanor or indictable misdemeanors, and then somewhere along the line, if it's at the close of probation or sometimes just say that it simply is a felony up until the time the judge says in the record somewhere this is a misdemeanor. Now, I don't know, maybe in Multnomah County where they've got so many cases, maybe this would work a hardship on the courts that when the time of probation terminates that they reconsider the matter to say, okay, this guy, he's gone through probation, all right, we've had no further difficulty with him, so I am treating this as a misdemeanor. But that way, it's open, it is a felony, up until the time the judge says, this is a misdemeanor. So we don't have any problem about probation, fine, this type of thing. And the judge, somewhere along the line, if he feels that this should be treated as a misdemeanor, he's going to have to say so. And the judge knows what he's doing.
Your very kind words being spoken by judges here this morning.
Oftentimes, DAs don't speak that way at the DA's meeting.
Well, at least you can understand the difference between a felony and misdemeanor.
I'm bothered a little bit at the idea that somebody has to apply. So you consider the kind of people reviewing them sometimes who are possible felons, or the probation department has to apply. I wondered if any thought could be overhanging about the idea that somebody, I mean,
the judge on
court
the
should actually,
yeah, I mean, I think this
each case
judge
should be acted on one way or another, not left in indefinite suspension.
It seems like, okay, now when the term of probation runs, the judge can enter sentence, or if he comes up at the original time of sentencing, says, okay, I'm going to sentence you to 90 days in the county jail. I'm treating this as a misdemeanor. So that in your order goes, the judge elects to treat this as a misdemeanor, sentence is 90 days in the county jail. And that up until the time that the judge says those magic words, somewhere along the line, it is a felony. Then we don't have to mess around with all these possible ramifications.
Mr. Chairman, I think that as Connell has a great deal of practical experience in this field, I would dearly love to hear from him.
Well,
I just had a question about E. So far as the period of time in which the court should declare this to be a misdemeanor, it looks as though it's open-ended.
That's what I
think. Now, I can see a man about to be sentenced as an habitual criminal in Multnomah County because he's got a Lane County conviction 5 years before, and so he races down to Lane County and says, Judge, would you change this to a misdemeanor? Is this what's intended at any time in the future that it could be changed from a felony to a misdemeanor?
course, under another section, if he has successfully served his probation, it would automatically be a misdemeanor without anything in the record. So, I mean, this is really going to... The reason why I like the magic word misdemeanor in there, because what this means is you got a lot of your habitual criminal. You're not going to be able to just use a simple judgment, or you're going to have the whole case file as far as... Of course, I guess maybe using the magic word misdemeanor would require this too, but you're going to have to go play through. You're going to have to show that what happened to run the file after you put on probation. So.
Mr. Connell, do you have any thoughts about the time to study these two sections?
Rather this morning, it appears to me you're doing nothing but attempting to restate the law's precedent. So to clarify the question regarding what happens if the court suspends a position sentence in a felony case where the court has the option of imposing a misdemeanor sentence. And this is what you're best calling a fact misdemeanor, really a misnomer. You're all aware. It creates confusion for me to talk about that misdemeanor. Every misdemeanor is indictable, obviously. It's simply a matter of election regarding procedure. When you want to proceed on extension of felony or misdemeanor, or complaint. My real problem, as far as I'm concerned, is I tend to disagree with the whole philosophy that we're discussing here regarding the court characterizing this defendant because he's committed a specific act. I lean very strongly toward the concept that unless the court initially feels that probation is in order after a complete workup, and I think that we're entitled to that. Psychiatric, physical, background workup in every major case. By major case, I'm talking now about any case that comes before the court. But unless the court, after that workup, is of the opinion that the defendant should be placed on probation, then he should be placed with the Division of Corrections, called what you mean. And that the Division of Corrections should have a wide range of options, very wide range. Perhaps we're talking about really a judicial pardon at some later date. I don't know. If you want to really, what you're really trying to do is, it would appear to me, is to take the case of the 18-19-year-old kid who steals the car. And in 5 years, you want to erase that from the record. Well, you can't rewrite history. If that's really what you're trying to do here, you're making an awful complicated thing.
Are you in favor of the indeterminate sentence, the Division of Corrections?
I think you have to have a wide range of options, and I do lean toward the end.
Of course, he's still...
Excuse me.
What's your suggestion? I'm not sure I wouldn't buy this. I think this is what you said, that if he goes to the corrections division, on those cases where the court is either sent in there or not, if he goes to the corrections division and the judge is through with him, he's a felon. If he doesn't, he's not. Isn't that what you're saying?
I think that's essentially what we're saying.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just make this observation on this. I think we should keep in mind here that what we're intending and attempting to do here in this draft is to classify what kind of crimes we're going to have in the state of Oregon. We're not attempting to set out the different ways in which an offender can be dealt with by the court, necessarily. And the reason that we got into this area is, first of all, this draft was approached by Professor Arthur, number one, I believe, with the thought in mind that the quote, indictable misdemeanor, unquote, approach was a good one that we wanted to retain. And secondly, that if we're going to have indictable misdemeanors after hearing the discussion that took place in the last subcommittee meeting, that we get into these limbo areas, these limbo situations where if you don't know whether this man is, this offense that this man stands convicted of is technically a felony or a misdemeanor. And this is merely an attempt to clarify whether we've got misdemeanors or felonies in any given case, and not set forth the the full range of authority and scope of the discretion of the court in dealing with offenders. Now, I'd like to point out that the Model Penal Code deals with that in a completely different article, disposition of offenders. It's got nothing to do, the way the Model Penal Code is structured, with the classification of crimes. Which brings me further to this, and I think that this is a fundamental policy question that this subcommittee and this commission is going to be faced with, and perhaps now is as good a time to face it as later on. And that is whether or not the commission is going to want to go in the direction that is proposed by the Model Penal Code and by the American Bar Association and their tentative drafts on sentencing of offenders, and the Model Sentencing Act, which is to give much more discretion to the sentencing judge than presently exists in this state. And assuming that the commission is so inclined to make that policy judgment, it would seem to me that this question about indictable misdemeanors becomes moot. It becomes a moot question.
If the judge has this authority, that say even a first degree murder, he can treat as a misdemeanor, although granted, no judge is going to do that.
Oh, I don't think if you're going to say that the trial court has this discretion in any felony case to reduce it to a lesser degree or to a misdemeanor, then you don't need to have.
Yeah, we don't indictable misdemeanors, like say removed. We don't need them.
And perhaps that's a judgment that needs to be made before we can expect the reporter to proceed on an intelligent basis to draft something here. Because I think although they're handled separately, and I would anticipate that as structuring the code, that they should be handled separately. I don't think we can divorce the two for the purposes of this indictable misdemeanor question.
Because they are, even though handled separately in the Model Code, I think though, probably before we spend too much time on this, like another meeting, it might be wise to come up with some language we agree with today, see what the full committee thinks of it, because I don't think you can separate the idea of giving the judge so much discretion from the general handling of corrections enough in the average mind to say that we shouldn't present this matter to the full committee as soon as possible
I think the rationale behind this approach, the Model Penal Code and the National Council on Crime and Delinquency, is that they're attempting to fit the punishment to the offender rather than to the crime. And I think that this is what our present law attempts to do on a limited basis with indictable misdemeanors, to allow the judge to fit the punishment to the offender and not be tied to a classification that this is the sentence that has to be imposed in any given situation.
Well, I certainly agree with Don. If we get to that point, and if we make the decision in accord with the Model Penal Code, the APA, and so on, then this does become moot. I must confess, I'm probably caused to spend more time than anybody else on this particular problem. Maybe it's a good idea just to move ahead and recognize that this is going to depend upon a policy decision that has to be made later. And trying to draft it now is, we're just spinning our wheels. Sooner or later, they may say, let's buy the Model Penal Code approach, and then we don't need this.
I agree with that. That they were getting an extreme complexity here that may not be of any value. Would your suggestion be then, Judge, that for the time being?
For the time being, we omit Section 2. I think that's Don's suggestion. First, I think it's a good suggestion.
You let Section 2 entirely.
At the most,
defer any action
within this, that later on, depending on what we do on the judge's power, we may or may not have to come back and fight this battle.
In the meantime, maybe somebody, myself or somebody, could get a few more concise and workable draft of it if we needed to get.
But go ahead. My suggestion would be that we could nonetheless go ahead and decide whether or not we agree that the classification of crime should be felonies, misdemeanors, and petty misdemeanors. You know, do that without getting into this question at this time.
I perhaps shouldn't be here today because I feel pretty strongly about this classification that you are comparing to clean to a felony misdemeanor thing. I just have a feeling that sooner or later it will just not stand up. That now, for instance, the federal government has defined this felony and petty offenses. The petty offenses are 6 months or less, as I understand. The Congressional Act provides that for a petty offense, the constitutional rights as such do not attach. Well, now, the Supreme Court has never passed on that act. Indirectly, they have, to this extent, in these recent cases that were decided last spring on what is a criminal contempt in which a man's constitutional rights attach. They have used the petty offense statute as an analogy or as a comparison to say that when it's a petty offense, then the constitutional rights in the criminal contempt statute or the criminal contempt proceedings do not attach. But whether they will go so far as to say that when a man is up and can be put in jail for 6 months, that actually his right to an attorney or a jury trial or whatever it may be does not attach, it's hard to say. It's a little difficult for me to believe that in line with some of their other decisions that they would say so when they are actually called upon to decide this question. And it seems to me like that in view of this problem, when do the things attach? You're continually using this phrase indictable misdemeanors, as any misdemeanors indict. We refer to misdemeanor and the judge will later declare whether it's a misdemeanor or what. Well, when the man is brought into the jailhouse, how is the police officer to know whether or not the judge will eventually say this is a misdemeanor or a petty offense or whatever it may be? And what rights does this man have when he's brought into the jailhouse? If it's a petty offense, do his rights attach or don't they? Now, it would seem to me like that some... Now, for instance, Mr. Chandler, the other day, we were discussing this over coffee, and he had a suggestion that I thought merited some consideration as to penal and non-penal offenses. In other words, a penal offense, his constitutional rights attached, that's it. If it's a non-penal offense, they don't. But any time you can throw a man in jail, 1 day or 10 years, it's a penal offense and his rights attached. When you deprive him of his liberty for some given period of time. Now, I don't know whether it's necessary to go that far now, but it certainly seems to me like that it is something that has to be considered. And you just cannot any longer use these broad sweeping terms of felony and misdemeanor, petty offense, and so forth.
Well, what would you substitute?
Well, that's, as I say, the only suggestion I've heard that, to me, merits consideration as a penal and non-penal offense.
Gentlemen, we're talking about philosophy, and this relates to what Justice Sloan said. One of the reasons, I'm going to generalize here, and anyone who wants to shoot me down, but one of the reasons that we have the so-called indictable misdemeanor, that is the either-or felony misdemeanor category, is because of the driving homicide. I think that was probably the root of the problem here. I may be wrong about that. The reason being, of course, that no jury, or many, many juries, would not convict a driver of manslaughter where death results from an automobile accident. And state and district attorneys were reluctant to bring those kind of actions because they knew they'd get swatted down. So as a response to this, the legislature created this either-or, either a felony or a misdemeanor, where there's a negligent homicide, to allow the jury to treat it in appropriate cases as a misdemeanor. The model penal code has turned away from that, I believe. And I think this is one of our problems. We've created sort of a monster that's pursuing us here this morning. The model penal code of negligent homicide no longer designates this as a misdemeanor. It classifies negligent homicide as a felony of the third degree. Now, it reduces the penalty, obviously, in an attempt, I believe, to meet this practical problem of the jury being reluctant to convict a driver where death results in an accident on an automobile. I suppose my conclusion is that ought we to continue in the Oregon law this either-or felony misdemeanor situation? Let's approach it as a felony or a misdemeanor, but not one or the other.
Well, the either-or situation...
With the built-in model penal code discretion of the court to treat a felony as a misdemeanor if he chooses under 612.
I think it's oversimplification to suggest that the either-or, or the indicted misdemeanor, which is properly criticized, but suggests that this all stems from negative homicide is not correct.
Well,
there's a whole host of such statutes which are widely used by prosecutors. Just to take two of them, the most frequently used is the taking and using motor vehicle as opposed to larceny and auto, which generally is going to be grand larceny with a 10-year maximum. Another is larceny in a building, which again gives a slight step down from a burglary or certain types of larceny in a building, store, and so forth. But there's a range of criminal activity in which at various times the legislature has felt that we ought to have the option. I agree, however, that to the extent that we can categorize them as felonies for first, second, third degree, or as misdemeanors, petty misdemeanors, probably solves a lot of problems. And I tend to that approach.
Chairman?
Yes, sir.
The reason I stuck with that, this is a crime that may, in the discretion of the sentencing judge, be treated either as a felony or a misdemeanor, were to a number. First, to give the judge considerable discretion. Second, because I thought there was some merit in continuing some acceptable portions of the present law, it would be easier to sell it to the legislature, to district attorneys, to sitting judges, to practicing lawyers, and this kind of thing. I think that you're correct that they should perhaps consider underlying philosophy to a greater degree. If we go to the model penal code, the New York and the Michigan idea of having class A, B, C, D, perhaps E felonies, and if we give the judge the power to declare any crime a misdemeanor, then obviously we've done away with this problem entirely, and we've got to, and perhaps we should just cross out two for the time being until we get to that sentencing element. Now, that still would leave us with the question of whether we should classify crimes as felonies, misdemeanors, petty misdemeanors, and violations. And Judge Sloan very perfectly brings up the constitutional problems involved. I think I had this in mind, that by setting a petty misdemeanor at 30 days or less in imprisonment, I was pushing it down so low that we might better, more likely get a workable situation. And that we should, with violations, do away with as much criminal conduct as possible. The criminal process simply doesn't solve all that and the social problems. I thought that the constitutional right should apply down to the 30-day situation, and that was a rather arbitrary decision. The other codes, the other modern codes, are a little old now in that they're 67, 65, 61, and those dates. All of them have some kind of a division between felonies, misdemeanors, petty misdemeanors, violations. And quite frankly, they say sometimes, the model penal code says, we just don't think the people are ready yet to do away with the felony misdemeanor classification. And this is not a matter of reason, it's a matter of just emotion.
Well,
much mistake.
I think that there are quite a few things that go to the felony misdemeanor classification other than the imposition of the sentence. The law of arrest is based around the felony misdemeanor distinction. So
it's a deadly force in arrest.
I don't feel that we could abolish the felony misdemeanor classification for that reason, unless we want to say that all misdemeanors can be arrested on probable cause and give, I mean, change the whole law of arrest around also.
I might point out in commentary to the model penal code, their tentative draft number two, after they had determined that they were going to stay with this felony misdemeanor classification, they comment that while the retention of these categories has some disadvantages and that the felony concept tends to be used for many very unrelated purposes, their abandonment involves so large a dislocation of procedure, which is what you're talking about to a great extent, that the gain would not offset the loss. Retaining the felony concept does not, of course, preclude critical attention to specific consequences of the classification, as in the law of arrest or murder. This is a question to be faced as those consequences are examined. But I think there's a lot to be said for that statement, that this is, it's hard to articulate just why we should stay with it, except that moving away from this, you're getting into a lot of collateral
on the other
questions.
On the other hand, Don, you would agree, I'm sure, that in the actual sentencing, what happens in sentencing, that there are just the two basic types of offenses. The felonies are a very small part, because even most misdemeanors, if you spend the sentence, you're fine. Isn't it? In other words, in reality, there really are just two classifications, the way the courts...
as far as you mean...
The actual sentencing plus the treatment.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that we ought to stay with a felony misdemeanor division. And I see some value in having a petty misdemeanor subdivision. But I'm concerned about the things that Judge Sloan mentioned. We talked a little bit about this last time. Three of the important consequences of declaring a particular crime to be a petty misdemeanor would be: is he entitled to an attorney? What general mode of procedure do you follow? Indictment and so forth and so on, circuit court or district court or whatever. And third, the very important consequence of conviction of a crime as impeaching for purposes of witnesses. And it's a troublesome thing all the time with the increase in number of crimes and so on. You're constantly faced with that problem. That's one of the important side effects. And you can't always predict what the Supreme Court is going to do. I read the Supreme Court cases to mean, the U.S. Supreme Court cases, to mean that if you're going to put a guy in, if you have the possibility of putting a guy in confinement wherever for 6 months or more, then you better dot every I and cross every T all the way up and down the line. I don't think they're ready to say yet if the maximum is 90 days that you got to provide him with an attorney and give him a jury trial and so forth and so on. They may say that in another 10 or 15 years, I don't know. But by, and I think certainly under this classification, if it's a straight misdemeanor, the U.S. Supreme Court has told us that we're going to have certain things like jury trial and right to an attorney, probably, and the other things. But on a 30-day thing, I'm not sure that we don't make some mistakes by classifying it as a misdemeanor, possibly getting into trouble on necessity of assignment of counsel, possibly getting into trouble on the necessity of jury trial, having the ancillary feature of petty misdemeanors, crime for purposes of impeachment, later cases, and so on. I think there's some disadvantages to it also. But I certainly would personally favor retaining the felony misdemeanor division.
Let's take a short break. 10 minutes maybe.